We're going to start out with a confession. Prepare yourselves. And it has nothing to do with your socks. Think over the past week or so. Have you at any time had occasion to curse the world? Have you said, this world is a mess? You can raise your hands. This world is a hot mess. This world is going to hell in a handbasket. Have you said, I'm so busy, and assumed that this world was to blame? Yeah. Have you sat in traffic and realized that you would be late for something important again and concluded that this world was to blame? This world was to blame. Have you heard the news again of Syrian citizens starving in sieged towns and turned your eyes in disgust from this world? This world that would let that happen. Yes, I believe, yes, we all have. We have all cursed the world. And do you know what the world thinks about that? Absolutely nothing. The world is unmoved, but not to its discredit. This is the way the world blesses us. It blesses us with its indifference. What do I mean by that? When I say the world, I don't mean the people of the world. I mean the trees, the air, the water, the stuff that was here long before we got here and started messing it up. The stuff that holds us steady like the ground, the air that feeds us oxygen so we can breathe. The world is not indifferent because it chooses not to care, but because it's not its job to care. It's our job. The artist Bruegel has painted Icarus, the daring son of Daedalus from the Greek myth. As the myth goes, Icarus and Daedalus are stuck on an island and their lives are in danger. And Daedalus, who's an amazing craftsman, builds wings for them to fly off the island towards safety, and he crafts them, he holds them together with wax, and he tells his son, Icarus, be sure you take the middle ground, the safe ground. Don't go too close to the ground because you might hit the waves and lose the flight, or don't go too high in the air because if you do, the sun will be so warm it might melt the wax on your wings. And Icarus, being a daring young man and interested in seeing the beauty of the world, as much of it as possible, heads straight to the sun. And the painting by Bruegel sees him fall to the ground, the wax melted and the wings gone, because he chose not to take the middle way. It is a tragic story. And I believe it breaks our hearts. And if you look at the painting, you will see something else interesting. As our hearts break, the waves continue on. The mountains stay still. The sky and the sea remain calmly, beautifully looking on. The world is unmoved. The world does not have a stake in our flourishing or in our tragedy. The world is there to remind us that somehow beyond the lives that we create for ourselves and others, there is something that remains, that somehow holds us. Our invocation words remind us that this is indeed another day, another sacred day even. These are the words we say every Sunday service, and for no other reason. This is a sacred day for no other reason than we can see, feel, hear, and understand the world. But how can we love something so full of muzak and bad coffee? How can we love something crusted with blood and bad theology? How can we? What's on your to-do list for today? I bet most of you have one. Even on Sunday, a to-do list. Do you have shopping today? Do you have chores? Paying a bill? Do you have fixing a broken sink, maybe? Anyone else? I have removing that balloon from our ceiling. That's on my to-do list today. I didn't even notice that the whole first service. And you know why? I think that sometimes we miss the things around us, the things of the world, because we are so focused on those to-do lists, those obstacles that we believe are in our way. We focus so much on those that we miss the world, the giant balloon on the ceiling that I should have been seeing all first service. Some of the worst theology, I think, has us do the same, has us focus on obstacles rather than seeing the beauty, the potential in the world around us. I went to a memorial service just this past Saturday. Reverend Scott, my husband, his uncle Keith died, and we were honoring his life at this service, and the service started out so beautifully, so well. Three of his children spoke, and they honored their father so dearly. They shared from their hearts the way that his lives touched their own and how his life will live on in their own lives every day because the way they choose to remember him by living in the way that he lived. And then the preacher came up. Now, I have to preface this by something. I love going to other congregations. I do it whenever I can, not to get away from you, but when I have a Sunday off, I want to experience the rest of the world and see the other theologies out there, the other ways of seeing things, and they teach me something about my own faith, and they teach me something about all of our faiths. And this is essential for me. And I think one of the reasons that I have this innocence, this ability to go into different places and expect really good stuff to come, is because I haven't been subject to all that much bad theology in my life. Reverend Scott has. He grew up in a congregation that, he moved away from in many ways. Well, he knew what was coming. He knew what was coming with this service, and I didn't, and so I did not prepare myself. And the minister came forward, and he started telling us, and telling especially the children of the man who had died, how terrible this world was, how awful it was, not because their father had died, but how awful it was just naturally. From the moment that life was born, it was a terrible thing, and all we had to do was focus on the afterlife, and their father was where he should be, in a better place. He was basically saying, turn away from this world that you just spoke so beautifully about and your testimonies about your father and how he lived. Turn away from this or you'll end up in hell. This went on for almost an hour. Reverend Scott had a word for it. He called it the holy harangue. I like that. I like that, the holy harangue. It's a total denial of everything that I read in the Genesis story, where over again and again, the Lord in that story says, this is good. It's a total denial of the good and the beauty in this world. A memorial service is a sacred occasion. We bury our dear ones. We say goodbye. Still, every day of our lives, we bury something near or far. Every day it does. It brings loss, loss of life, loss of hope. As much joy as every day brings, it can also bring loss. And I don't mean this to be flip. Almost every day around here, we lose 30 minutes in traffic. And that matters, right? Because that's 30 minutes that we could be spending with our dear families, our loved ones. We can close out these days by shaking our heads and profaning the earth and our lot here, giving the world the holy harangue. But that's just as bad of a theology as the preacher at the memorial service shared, in my opinion. If there is one kind of spiritual practice that we do need today, it's loving the world anyway. Loving it anyway. If this were easy, it wouldn't be spiritual practice. Take a look at the picture on the outside of your orders of service. A picture of people building up the world after it has collapsed around them. Loving the world anyway is treasuring this life. Treasuring this life when it needs most to be built up again, when children are murdered, when terror splits our buildings, our hearts in two, when we are with dear ones who are going through health struggles. Remembering what is necessary and good and building it up again. When I first became a Unitarian Universalist minister, I had one great fear. It was that these people that I feel called to be with and serve, that they wouldn't let me do what I feel most needs to be a part of our spiritual lives, which is spiritual practice. I was afraid that these great people that I was called to serve would only let me be rational, that we would have troubles in our lives and we would have to come together and think our way through them. Because we are a rational people, right? But that's not the only tool that we have, and I thank you for that and for teaching me that. We also have a space in our hearts for prayer, for meditation, for spiritual practice, for those things that are non-rational, but just as powerful and necessary. There's an old joke that when Unitarian Universalists pray, we begin with, "To whom it may concern." You might hear in one of our worship services a prayer beginning, "Spirit of life, God of your understanding, force of love, being beyond understanding, source of awe, rational thing, unmoved mover, gods of antiquity, earthly angels, Demeter." By the time we get to the prayer itself, we've gotten lost in the thicket of articulation. But what I learned, and my dear congregation, thank you for teaching this to me, is that prayer doesn't need to be that difficult, that strained, to fit into our unique paradigm. You've taught me that, yes, you do all have unique ways to be with that which is holy beyond, to be with your own aches and your yearning. You have as many unique ways to pray and meditate, to find peace and wonder, as you have unique words for the holy, which includes, for many of you, no word at all. Some, as the ache of this life weighs on you, will reach out your hand to me and say, "Can we pray?" Others will be open to a space of silent meditation or even just a spoken meditation. Some will make space in their heart for humor. I can ask, "What is of ultimate meaning to you?" And that will determine if we begin our spiritual practice with God or force of love or even a mathematical equation. Yes, that's happened before. One of the most sacred prayers I believe I've ever heard was a low, slow snoring sound. A dear mother whose aches were too many to recount. She came into my office tired, tired from the world, and she fell asleep. And it was peace incarnate. This world, it may be indifferent, but you are not. You are quite moved. Another way to say indifferent is to say it does not judge. It does not judge your prayers. They're not wrong. Whether they're a croak from a frog or a monk's meditations. So never doubt that. You were born, I believe you were born knowing how to raise your testimony to that which is beyond. And you don't need a name for it. And if there is one spiritual practice that we need right now, it is remembering how to love the world anyway. And when I say anyway, I mean two very different things, two necessary things. Love the world anyway. Any way you can. Love the world any way that's right for you, and love the world anyway. Anyway, anyway, even when the aches settle in. So, let's practice this. Give yourself a moment now to consider your socks. I'm going to ask you to praise them. Just like Pablo Neruda did in our poem. If you're wearing socks, of course, if you just have shoes on your feet, that's fine as well. Think of your shoes and praise them. Yes, I want to hear this. What can you say for your socks? What praise do you have for your socks this morning? They're warm. They match. You have awesome socks. Yeah, they're clean. Yes. You've got two pairs on. All right. These are some fabulous socks this morning, folks. They match. They're not falling down. Does this matter? Yes. This is important, remembering to praise even our socks. This is important. There was an auction that I was a part of when I was an intern out in Sunnyvale, where I walked around the room at first and I realized that there was pretty much nothing I could afford there. Interns have astoundingly low salaries. This is why we love them all the more. Give them our care and affection when they're not getting our money. I was walking around this auction and I saw one thing that for some reason I thought that maybe I could afford that. It was this one item, and it was a pair of handmade socks. Handmade wool socks. And at first I thought, okay, I should do this because I need to purchase something at this auction. But then I said, do I really deserve handmade wool socks? Isn't that a little ridiculous? Handmade wool socks. But I put my name down anyway, and hey, I won, and they were $45. $45 for a pair of socks, right? Well, the woman who knits these socks, and I see Joan knitting right now, and you're reminding me, taking me back there. She came and she measured my feet. I mean, these were perfect socks. And they are the most comfortable, most wonderful, most awesome socks anyone has ever had in their life. I call them my holy socks. And that's now for two reasons. Because now they are totally holy. Big holes in them. But they're also my holy socks because I was wrong that I didn't need those socks. They taught me one more way to love the world. And that's necessary. This world that is indifferent to our flourishing or our tragedy. It doesn't need our gratitude, our bemused affection, our odes to our socks. But we do. We need to remember that we can be wrong about the world and shocked again into loving it. The world blesses us with its indifference by giving us the authority, the space to be anything but indifferent. At times, this settles in as an ache for everything that we wish the world would be. My prayer for you is that you pause today, tomorrow, no matter who wins the Super Bowl, and raise a praise for this world in prayer, in meditation, in mathematical equations, in any way you are called. Love the world anyway. Amen.